Hello and welcome to our University of Strathclyde podcast series, run out of the world-famous School of Education, right in the heart of the beautiful city of Glasgow in Scotland. We bring you a mix of meeting academic interviews, thought pieces, conversations and provocations on all things education, to give you a glimpse into our world-leading education research here at Strathclyde, and of course to stimulate your questions and thinking around the meaning, purpose and practice of education. In schools, in communities, and of course in all our lives. Today we have the pleasure of talking to Dr. David Lewin, who is a senior lecturer at the School of Education and the course leader for our Joint Honours Education Studies program. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Katja. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm delighted to be able to speak to you today.
Great, thank you. David, let's talk about you first before we introduce the education studies program.
Sure.
You have published on a lot of different subjects to do with technology and education, the philosophy of technology, religion and education. You're known for many things and interests. But is there anything in particular that you would like maybe to reveal about yourself today to our listeners?
Well, when I grew up, I wanted to be a proper educationalist. I still feel like I dabble in too many things, and I have indeed published and worked in diverse areas, and I try to work on these different intersections, and it's quite hard to maintain, the latest knowledge and latest research in these different fields. But in general, my research is focused around three different areas, the intersections between these areas, which you've already kind of touched on. Philosophy of education, which is a big part of my sort of background and interests. Philosophy of technology, which is what I did my PhD on particularly, although I focused also on philosophy of religion. So it's those three: philosophy of education, technology and religion. And my PhD research indeed was looking at the intersection between philosophy of religion and technology, thinking about how technology is understood in contemporary life, and how religious traditions and practices have understood and reinterpreted, I guess, themselves in light of technological change, and maybe some of the critical discourses around technology. So that's been my general background, and I sort of came into education somewhat by accident about 10 years ago as an academic. I worked in an alternative education school, a Krishnamurti school, and Krishnamurti is a philosopher of education, and he's got a Krishnamurti school in England, and I worked there for a couple of years, and I developed a strength and interest in philosophy of education. And so I find myself now sort of positioning myself, so to speak, in that discipline. And there's quite a lot of work in the philosophy of education these days. And I'm actually the secretary for the Philosophy of Education Society of Great Britain. So I just want to mention that to anyone who's interested in or intrigued about what this might be. Please have a look. We're very much interested in educational debates from a philosophical perspective. So that just gives a sort of background, I guess, to where I'm coming from.
Thank you. And then can you maybe give us a flavour of any of your current projects? Is that around philosophy of education as well, or?
Yes. So I still work within philosophy of education quite broadly, but that can mean so many different things. The project I'm currently working on is particularly looking at religious education, and trying to think what it would mean for religious education to be established on what's sometimes called the scientific study of religion or the academic study of religion. So what you can sometimes notice is that university departments have these people's students and lecturers studying religious studies. And then in schools, children do RE, at least in England, they do RE. In Scotland, it's a different subject, RME. And actually, there's a big disjunction between what takes place in school and what happens in university. And I'm quite interested in why that's the case. and how school-based RE can be based more on the discipline of religious studies at university, which is a very topical debate, particularly in England, but also around the UK, because the whole notion of what RE is for, what it does, should it be there at all, is a hot topic these days.
Can you maybe give us an example of what this difference actually is? So what is it people study in universities, and what's the stuff that people look at in schools, and how, why does it not come together?
That's that gets right to the heart of it. So in a nutshell, religious studies has developed around this thing called the world religions paradigm. The world religions paradigm is a presentation of the world religions as five or six big traditions. So Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, and sometimes Sikhism. So these are the sort of categories, the boxes that we like to put people in. Well, this person's a believer in this or belongs to that tradition. So we've used this world religions paradigm. Now, about 20 or 30 years ago in RS research, religious studies research, people started pointing out that this paradigm is very much a kind of construction of Western scholars. There's no such thing as Hinduism. It's a collection of different practices of all sorts of different communities across a wide range of people and diverse cultures. And to put an ism to it, like Hinduism, is really not on, basically. It doesn't make sense. It's very much a projection of Western scholars. So this led to a kind of deconstruction of the whole discipline of religious studies as based on the world religions paradigm. Nevertheless, popular discourse around religion remains sort of tied to the world religions paradigm. So we still, in the media, we talk about the big five, six religions, and most notably for my project, we still talk about the five or six world religions in school. So the attempt to go, let's say, beyond the world religions paradigm in university has not yet informed changes in school. That's also influenced by the fact that school religious education has had to think about why it doesn't account for the life experience of the majority of young people, which is non-religion. So many, probably about 60% of young people in schools in England certainly, identify as a form of non-religion. That doesn't necessarily mean they go to humanist meetings or secularist meetings, but they do reject the traditional categories. They don't go to church or anything like that. So how is it that we can be inclusive of the experiences of young people if religious education is not also thinking about things that don't fall within within their own life experience, that is, say, non-religion? So the RE curriculum, certainly in England, and I say there is a parallel debate in Scotland, but it's not as it's slightly different in Scotland. So there's been a long debate about the place of humanism in the RE curriculum in England, and there's a big debate right now about changing the subject title from religious education to religion and worldviews. And the change to religion and worldviews is to account for the fact that there are, you know, millions of young people who don't see themselves in any way connected to religion as a traditional idea. So there's both of those things. There's going beyond the world religions paradigm, and there's also including the many young people who aren't necessarily religious. So all those changes need to shake up the RE scene. And there's a lot of shaking going on, but nobody quite knows then what to ground a new curriculum, a new RE curriculum in. And my research is about saying, well, there is this thing called the scientific study of religion. So rather than have different churches, different faith groups, different other stakeholders, let's say, involved, parents involved in what RE should look like, and maybe those communities should have a part in that, ought we not to first of all consider what the subject religious studies looks like as a scientific discipline first, and then see how that translates to school. So that's basically what I'm working on right now.
This might be a can of worms to open, but now you would have to explain to us at least a little bit what is the scientific study of religion, and so we know what you proposing as an alternative.
Well, that is indeed a can of worms. There isn't a straightforward answer to that, but there is a discipline of religious studies that takes place in universities that is not the same as what is traditionally called theology. So theology is the study of, let's call it, the Christian faith and different concepts within the Christian faith. The scientific study of religion is informed by all sorts of quote-unquote scientific disciplines, including sociology, philosophy, history, and it uses the methods of sociology, philosophy, history, maybe psychology, to understand the experiences and histories of people that we, or communities that we typically call religious. But it begins with a recognition that religions are complex, they change over time, they are porous, in other words, they interweave with between each other, they don't have clear-cut boundaries sometimes. So the notion of religion is, is in the science of religion, is itself under debate. So one of the big questions is, well, how do we translate those very complex, contested debates about the nature of religion, about the methods to study religion in what I'm calling the scientific study of religion, how do we translate that into an RE class? So that is a really interesting and difficult problem, because inevitably when we say to young people we're going to talk about religion, then immediately the kind of world religions paradigm or something like it is the obvious starting point. So how do we present religious traditions in a way that recognizes the complexity of those things that we call religions, while at the same time also appreciating the sort of simplification that you might require for, let's say, a P4 kids or a S1 kids or whatever it might be. So it's a kind of question of how we represent something that's inevitably very, very complex. But yeah, the question of what the scientific study of religion is itself a part of the science. No one has a straightforward answer.
So do I understand this correctly, that you're basically suggesting there shouldn't be a big paradigm that we hit people over the head with, but it's more about opening up the subject of religion to the experiences of young people, so there's might be found some meaning in those more fluid experiences of people just doing everyday things? And
yes, absolutely. So the experiences of young people in their everyday lives, those experiences sometimes will resonate with stories from our religious traditions. So people will experience, you know, growing up, they'll experience maybe someone gets born in their family, maybe someone dies in their family, people get married, events take place. And of course, religious traditions often have rituals or ways of marking those or considering those. So we want to make, I would suggest that RE, whatever it looks like, should take account of the fact that although young people may not be part of an ism or one of the big five world religions, their experience may still resonate with some of the narratives that underpin those. But, you know, it's also worth thinking about what can we learn from marginal traditions, traditions that we don't often think about, Druidism, Wicca, or even fictional religions, Jediism. These these kinds of sometimes called new religious movements or alternative religions, how we frame something as mainstream versus alternative is itself a really interesting question. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a question of how we frame all of this to young people in general, rather than thinking about it in terms of content they need to learn. Mm-hmm. So the problem is that when we think about the big five, then children end up kind of thinking about learning about, well, learning certain facts about those traditions that they can then marshal for an exam paper and so forth.
But it doesn't have necessarily meaning for your life or...
Right.
It doesn't catch your attention necessarily.
Right. It doesn't resonate with your particular experience. And it doesn't also help students to see the ways in which we frame ourselves and other people. Mm-hmm. And of course, the big debate about the framing of Muslims in the media these days is a bit very topical question. And that is something that I think all children need to think about, and all of us need to think about, is some of the ways in which we helpfully and unhelpfully present or frame certain traditions and certain people within those traditions.
So if we think, if we transition that to just talking about our education studies program, that kind of thinking out of the box or thinking beyond sort of a paradigm of what education is, or yeah. I know that in the UK people often associate education immediately with school education or working in schools or being trained to be a teacher, but that is not necessarily the case, or is it?
That's a nice link, Katja, because indeed, you know, the way we frame education or the way we frame religion, there are parallels in the sense that, yeah, we have a very, I think, narrow notion of what education is, or at least the study of education tends to be thought of in terms of teacher education and becoming a teacher. So many of the students I talk to, or potential students on open days, come to me not realizing really that the academic study of education is something in its own right that sits with and informs teacher education, but it is not the same thing as teacher education. So the academic discipline of education considers the influences, the intentional influences of people on other people in all sorts of ways, in all sorts of contexts. Of course, parents influence children influence parents, children influence their grandparents and vice versa. There's mentoring, there's coaching, there's so there's all sorts of situations where thinking educationally and understanding the educational relations, it can be very, very illuminating. So I think the academic study of education illuminates in all sorts of ways beyond school. So it doesn't, of course, exclude school. It's certainly part of the story, but there's a lot more to thinking about education and the study of education than just school.
So would you say then, if I had to press you about the sort of core mission of the education studies program, would you say it's to think about education over the whole life, or as a kind of lifelong endeavor, rather than just as a school-based one? What can students expect when they enroll on the education studies joint honors?
So broadly speaking, yes, it is about the lifelong experience, educational experiences, from birth till death, and the ways in which we intentionally influence other people, and sometimes how we intentionally influence ourselves. So in other words, if I decide to go on a gap year to discover, you know, different cultures around the world, or just to kind of have an experience, then that itself is driven by an educational imperative, an educational intention. So I think what students should expect on our course is to think about or develop a way of seeing education taking place in all sorts of contexts. In order for us to be able to distinguish any kind of human influence from anything else, we want to say no, it's not just human influences that are education, but they have to be intentional. So one way of marking out education from other forms of influence, like I don't know, advertising, would be to say that educational influences are those which seek to do something of benefit to the one being influenced. So that's one way of saying, well, we can distinguish these kinds of educational influences from other kinds of socializing.
But what if you think you want to do something good and you don't?
Well, indeed. So a teacher is somebody defined as someone who tries to influence somebody else with an intention that they believe is good for the other person. That doesn't mean that they are right, of course, as children sometimes perceive from their parents. Your parents don't always know what's good for you. And I don't always know what's good for my children. I don't always know what's good for my students. However, in developing some kind of educational experience, my intention is to do that. So it may not work out, but that's the intention. And having that structure, that definition, allows us to distinguish education from other kinds of social influence. And of course, social life is constantly about influencing each other. So thinking about education's forms of influence is, I think, a really helpful way of being broad with the concept, but then including intention to that allows us to narrow it down somewhat.
So I imagine the course, there will be readings and lectures and conversations around these questions: what is actually good for the other person, and what are the different kinds of good that different teachers, be they in schools or in anywhere else, parents, as you said, imagine for their for those who are responsible for.
Yes, so who gets to decide on behalf of who what the good influence looks like? So if I try to ensure my kids don't eat too many sweeties, it's my responsibility to make that judgment call at certain times, but there'll be certain times when it's illegitimate for me to make that kind of judgment call. Maybe when they're 18 years old or something, then they can eat as many sweeties as they want. So the question of power, the question of knowledge, who understand, do I really know what I'm doing when I'm trying to influence someone else? Sometimes no, sometimes yes. When is authority over others legitimate? When isn't it? When is the exercise of power justified? When isn't it? So those are the broad questions. And in fact, I would say the subject education studies is defined by a set of questions, as we've just been discussing, rather than answers, because those answers can change, but the questions remain fairly stable. The questions are what define the discipline. So the actual subjects that we look at, these questions might be to do with, you know, or context, I should say, might be to do with technology. We might look at school. We might look at mentoring, coaching. So the question of general influence takes place in all sorts of contexts. We also use some quite interesting examples from film and literature, which you know about as well, because you're involved in that particular teaching.
I was just about to mention it.
So we look at movies and how people try to influence each other in those. I mean, one thing I haven't mentioned about the course, which I think is worth drawing attention to, is that sometimes people say, well, teacher education is about the practical stuff of what you need to do in a classroom. The academic study of education studies is more theory, it's more reading, more that kind of thing, more theoretical. And I just want to say that's not quite the case. So education studies has its practical implication. Indeed, it thinks about how parents should behave. It thinks about how we should act. It has a certain set of principles that it can present. And in order for students to experience that, on our course, there are two opportunities for students to go on a placement. And I think we are the only education studies course in Scotland that has more than one placement. It's quite a novel and important dimension of the course, that the practice is built into the course. So one of those placements is in an adult education environment, and one is in a young person's environment, but neither of them are school. So neither of them are formal educational spaces. So just to sort of get away really from the idea that education studies is like an intellectual theoretical stuff, while teacher education is practical. I don't want to allow listeners to go away with that misconception.
I'm just looking at the different modules of the course, and I see in year two there's a module called Education Research and Action. So that sort of confirms what you just said, that I presume that this is about thinking about how you actually research such practical situations that are not necessarily in schools.
Right, because most of our students will end up doing a dissertation in their final year on a topic that interests them. And it's very, very important, of course, that over the process of the degree, students increasingly, you know, develop and take up their own interests wherever that takes them. But to prepare students for a dissertation, it's quite important that they're given the tools to engage in independent research, guided, of course, by a tutor. So in the third year, they do indeed do some educational research, which is called In Action. And it involves engaging in research methods, but in applied contexts. In other words, looking with academics at projects that they're engaged in, and thinking about methods that can be used in a particular context. Because so often methods in education can be quite dry and dreary as a subject. So trying to make that more engaging for students is important.
So in case we have listeners who think about maybe studying education studies as an academic subject, can you tell us something about the demographic of students who normally comes to study education studies, and what are they interested in? What are they doing afterwards? Who is the education studies student in essence?
Well, that's a slightly tricky question to answer. If I was in England, where education studies as an academic subject has a bit more of a history, it might be slightly easier to answer that question, although still there it's not that easy. So education studies as an academic subject hasn't been in Scotland for very long at all, a handful of years only. We've only had a couple of years of graduate leave to complete the course so far, so it's a relatively new course. A lot of our students, maybe approaching a half, I would say, do then, after their education studies joint degree, go on to do teacher education, a PGDE, and go into classroom teaching. But they'll have had a broader experience of education to draw on, which we think is really, really helpful. some of the graduates are working in or with partners that they met on one of their placements, and that will be community educators around Glasgow or around Scotland, youth groups, community groups. Some will be involved in childcare. I know some want to go into educational psychology, and so they're looking at how to combine or have done education and psychology. It's very, very broad, and it's hard to sort of put it in a nutshell what one profile might be. But I really want to encourage a view of education as basically sort of everywhere in society and culture. Of course, we have human resources, as it's sometimes called in most companies. And I know that's a popular route sometimes. So it's quite broad. And it also obviously depends on the particular subject combination of the student. So everybody that does education studies at Strathclyde does it with a second subject. That might be history, that might be psychology, that might be sport. And so the combination, of course, influences their destination. But we also have noticed that, apparently it's a fact, people that work in the recruitment side of things, they explained to me that 2/3 of graduate employers look for students in any subject discipline with a good degree. So in fact, you know, if you go to the NHS or Barclays or many of the general administrative or council graduate roles, general graduate roles, a lot of those will not require a particular subject combination, but just be quite open. Mm-hmm. I think our subject is quite broad in its scope, so I think students are well placed for that.
It sounds like a very interesting subject to study, to broaden your horizon and think about education in on a much bigger scale than you might have expected previously.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly what we encourage. And because students think students come, of course, having been to school and having normally experienced, let's say, conventional education through their own experience in school, we tend to sort of carry with us our own experience. So indeed, trying to kind of complicate or question students' sort of natural experience of education is, I guess, a first step.
Mm-hmm. If anybody listens and wants to learn more, who would they contact? Would they contact you to ask more questions? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. By all means, get in touch with me. There's a sort of team of people involved in education studies at Strathclyde, and we're always keen to discuss questions or let you know about any resources that we can and guide you to information that we've got.
In terms of the structure of the course, it's probably pretty straightforward. Like normal degree programs, it starts in September, right?
That's right. Yeah. So the way the course is organized is it's run by the Humanities and Social Sciences faculty. And so students joining our course will begin belonging to the faculty as a whole. And they'll choose a range of courses from the faculty as a whole. And then it's in their second year that they will sort of specialise into their two subjects, education and whatever else they're choosing, history, psychology, or what have you. So it gives, again, a kind of broad and general first year with more and more specialisation as you go through the other 3 years, which is a fairly natural progression, I guess.
Yes. Well, thank you. Well, that sounds great. And any students who are listening, please get in touch with David about the Education Studies program at the School of Education, University of Strathclyde, which is, by the way, a great program to teach on. And thank you very much for being with us today on our Strathclyde podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And anyone's got any questions, be delighted to speak to you.
Thank you for listening in to our Strathclyde Education Podcast series. We'll be back soon with another episode.